we go from here? What's next? What have you been inspired to do? I want to start off with a little story. And I'm not sure about I'm going to say this story is probably an allegory. But a little town in Africa, a little village way out in the middle of nowhere, woke up one morning and they looked around them, and all around them there was nothing but enemy troops all the way around surrounding their entire village. Their entire village was surrounded by enemy troops, and the situation was completely hopeless. It was the days before cell phones. There was no way that they were going to be able to get outside of that village for help. And the enemies were just going to wait them out. So they got together. The elders of the village got together, the chief and the witch doctor, and they talked about this, and they talked about what are we going to do? And after a long day of talking about this, towards sunset, they finally got together and they called all the villagers together in the center. And the chief and the witch doctor came forward and they said, there's only one thing that we know to do, and that is human sacrifice. The only thing that's going to get us out of this is human sacrifice. And they said, not just any human sacrifice, we need 10 young men. You're cutting my mic early there. We need 10 young men. You want me to switch to the other mic? Okay, does this one work right? Okay, we need 10 young men that are willing to give their lives. These young men, they have to be volunteers. We can't have, that nobody can be forced. They have to be volunteers. And the entire village was silent. They just couldn't believe that this was just, it was beyond anything that they could imagine. Like, how could this happen? Like, they needed these 10 young men. They needed these men for, if they were ever going to be able to break out of this situation they're in, they had to have these young men. And everyone was quiet. They were just stunned. They're in the hot African sun. They were stunned. They just didn't know what to do next. And after a while, the chief's son stepped forward. He stepped out, volunteered himself as a human sacrifice. And the priest had set up a screen so that no one could see what was going on. There was a gap under the screen. And this young man walked up, and people just, you could hear a gasp go through the crowd. Some women started crying. And this young man walked up behind the screen. And there was a flash of the knife, a thud. Blood ran out from under the screen. And it went a little while till the next young man stepped forward. And one by one, 10 young men walked up behind that screen. And these young men were the best. They were the best that the tribe had to offer. And they were a small tribe. They couldn't take this loss easily, but it was the best they had to offer. And they were all volunteers. The blood ran out under the screen until it came all the way up to the edge of the crowd, and people had to step back to keep from stepping to the blood. And then the witch doctor said, y'all can go home, and we'll see what happens in the morning. So the villagers went home, but it was a sad crowd that went home. They were just stunned. They couldn't believe what they had just witnessed. But behind that screen, a young boy decided to creep back there to see what was going on back there. So after sunset, when the all the other villagers that went home, this young boy crept back behind the screen. He went back there to see what had happened. And behind the screen were 10 dead sheep. When those young men had went behind that screen, the chief and the witch doctor had told them, "You are no longer your own. You have volunteered your lives. You've given them voluntarily. You're now dead men." He told them, "When darkness falls, I want you to break through the enemy lines and go to the tribe across the mountain for help." And when those young men went through that enemy line, they were machines. They were not anything that any other human would want to deal with, because they were already dead. They were already dead. So how many of us are already dead? I'm a farmer at heart. As a young man, 9 or 10 years old, my dad never liked farming. My dad was always, he was a construction worker, and he thought farming was for people that weren't smart enough to do construction work. And as I was growing up, I always wanted to be a farmer. I wanted to have I remember as a little boy, I wanted to have some pigs. That was my dream. As a little boy, I never had pigs. I grew up, I got married. I decided to give my boys, my family, the life that I'd always dreamed of. So when I got married, my father-in-law was a big-time farmer, and we rented some land off of him, and we raised produce for the first 12 years that we were married. My boys grew up in the produce patch. We had cattle. I could go back in the barn and pray. We lived on 150 acres. Actually, my father was a part of a bigger property that was probably closer to 1,000 acres that my father-in-law controlled through rent or owning, one or the other. We had a creek out back. It's actually a small river. Great place to go boating and swimming. I went to farmer's market twice a week. I love farmer's market. I love interacting with people there. But along the way, I caught a vision for the church. And I saw that the church needed people that were willing to go and do uncomfortable things. And it's a long story, and I'm not going to get into all of it, but I just want to say that we ended up in State College, which is not a city, it's just a large town. About 40,000 people, I think, 40 to 50,000 people, unless the students are there, and then it's 80 to 100. And we have about a third acre. And it's had its good times and its bad times. I learned a lot of things living in town. It was hard for our family. I look at Wendell, and you know, he moved into town out of, off the farm, and it seems like he's done really well. I feel like we haven't done nearly as well. My older boys, my older boys have really resented. They've really resented that I've moved him into town. They're not angry at me, but they've never gotten used to the idea. Thankfully, an older brother from out of town, about 30 minutes away when my oldest son got his driver's license, actually before that, my mom was working at a garden center, and there was an older brother, that older godly man that was willing to hire my boys. And of course, with the way the regulations run, that he had to hire them illegally, but I'm happy for that. Appreciate him. I think God will bless him for that. But he hired my older boys to work at his garden center. And they've really enjoyed it. They enjoyed it to the point. We used to go fishing on Saturdays. Trying to make up for the lack of the lack of country life that they've got, and that after moving to town, I would purposely try to keep my Saturdays open so that I could do something with them, and I'd take them fishing on Saturdays. But after they started working for this garden center, they enjoyed their work so much that they didn't even want to go fishing anymore. They were happy to go work. So that was a blessing. And I want to tell you that because that I feel like for some of us, it's not as easy as others to live in town. And sometimes there's people outside of town. Maybe your calling isn't to live in town. But the people outside, like Luke Martin, older man, he's no longer working actively in the nursery. But he was willing to put himself out there and hire my young boys to work. And I don't know what we would have done if it hadn't been for that opportunity. The older people outside, or not even older people, just people that are willing to give opportunities. So where do we go from here? Maybe your calling isn't to move into town. There's opportunities that we would have missed if we didn't live in town. We have an old man that lives next door to us who has become a grandfather to my youngest son, his primary babysitter. My youngest son is 5 now, and he wants to go over to Bob like every day, daily. Either Bob's in our house or my boy's over at his house. And Bob has come with us to church for the last 5 years, well, 4 years, pretty faithfully. And I just came off of a week of Bible school, and he went down to Bible school with us like 3 evenings. Just, we didn't even ask him to go along. He just wanted to go along. So there are rich opportunities. I have a 13-year-old daughter, our only daughter, and she has a friend that had been around for years. She'd been around the community for probably, I want to say, ever since she was about this big. I don't know how big that was, but, you know, in 4 or 5 years old. But in the last year, she started coming over really regularly. And my wife was pretty, she was always a little, she didn't dress very modestly. And that kind of concerned us, so we didn't really want her to be around a lot. And my wife always kind of held her at arm's length and didn't want to get too friendly with her because she kind of hoped she wouldn't become good friends with my daughter, I think. I mean, with good reason. But this last year, she just kept coming around more, and she would stay as late as we'd let her. And finally I asked my daughter about it, and she said, well, she wasn't supposed to say, but her friend had confided in her that her mom was always drunk. And she She needed a place to go. And of course, that broke our hearts. My wife decided to see what could be done. We started letting her stay later. We let her in the house. I don't know what happened. There's some conversations went on. She started dressing a little more acceptably. We let her in the house, and she's many evenings, she comes over. We don't ask any questions. She comes over, and we let her stay as long as we're awake. So maybe 10 o'clock, usually we read a Bible story before we go to bed, and she stays for that. She knows it's time to leave after that. So there's opportunities, but there's also sacrifices. So right now we're entering a different phase. Manny was telling a story about how he was trying to get this cafe started, and as he was trying to get this cafe started, he ended up kind of getting suckered into being the one starting the cafe. Well, I've been trying to get people to move to Louisiana for a long time, and Hawaii for a long time, and I couldn't get anybody interested. But I had a friend that was trying to get people to move to Louisiana, and I thought I'd help him out and see if I could rustle up somebody to go along. And a little bit of a long story, but I rustled up me. So, Lord willing, in the next winter, probably sometime, we'll be moving to Louisiana. But we have these connections we're going to leave behind. And I don't know what the Lord has in that, but what next? Our lives are always changing. We can't always choose what we're going to do next. But I think we need to be like those young men that went on that journey. Unless our lives are on the altar, unless we're completely given up, unless we've completely sold out, unless we're not our own, we can't be useful in the Lord's work. I'll leave you with that.